The 19th century critic William Hazlitt said that anyone who was familiar with Coriolanus could save themselves the trouble of reading Edmund Burke's attack on the French Revolution and Tom Paine's defence of it, because Shakespeare gives you both sides of the question. The play anatomises the strengths and the weaknesses of both absolutism and republicanism, interrogates both the principle of aristocracy and that of democracy. The plebeians and the tribunes, their elected representatives, have arguments as good as those of the patricians, who at the beginning of the play have been hoarding grain for no good reason. But ultimately, Hazlitt argues, Shakespeare had a leaning towards the side of arbitrary power, that of Coriolanus himself. The language of poetry, Hazlitt said, naturally falls in with the language of power. Whatever the force of the arguments on either side, the audience is swept away by the charisma and the energy of the play's warrior hero. In particular, there's something irresistible about his solitary intensity. "Alone I did it," he vaunts when remembering the conquest of Coriolis, which gave him his name. The very qualities that make Coriolanus a great warrior, his singleness of purpose and his lack of compromise, make him a poor politician. The play's a tragedy because the man of war cannot make his peace with his own people. It's also a work of deep irony. Coriolanus is the walking embodiment of masculinity. He feels a more intense bond with Aufidius, his opponent on the battlefield, than with his own wife. And yet the march of this supremely manly man comes to an abrupt halt in the face of his mother, Volumnia. No wonder he's so angry when Aufidius calls him boy. Coriolanus is Peter Pan.